years ago when I graduated from the university in Louisiana. It was during the days of Vietnam, being a patriotic young man. I joined the military thinking of making it a career. In my fourth year, I volunteered for shore duty in Vietnam, believing our leaders who said our cause was noble. We were going to be the liberators. And so many of us went to Vietnam buying into that great lie. And so many of us were changed by that experience. The violence, the suffering, the death, losing friends there. And in the madness of war, my faith became stronger. Death was close and my God became close. And I felt God calling me to be a priest. I grew up in a traditional Catholic family in Louisiana, but whenever I saw a priest, I would turn around and go the other way. And so I didn't know what to do with that call I was feeling. Talked to an army chaplain, and he helped me get into the Maryknoll Order, a missionary community, working in 25 countries around the world with the poor. Being male, I was accepted into the priesthood and to the seminary. And in 1972, I was ordained and found that meaning, that hope, that joy that I was seeking in life, that we are all seeking in life. I was assigned as a young priest to our mission work in Bolivia, where this slum on the outskirts of La Paz became my home for the next 5 years. And it was here where the poor, they really became my teachers. They really introduced to me their struggle for justice and really food for the table. So many of the people there, the majority, living in the shacks without running water. So many of their children not having the medicines they needed to be healed, didn't make it beyond the age of 4 or 5. And there was our country, the United States, supporting a brutal dictatorship, General Banzer, and the men with the guns, who were exploiting the cheap labor there and those vast natural resources. The poor introduced to me that all-important word, solidarity, solidaridad, which simply means to walk with others, to accompany others in their struggle, to make the struggle of others your struggle. And it was in Bolivia I was introduced to a new theology, a theology called the theology of liberation, that gives hope to people, especially the poor, that teaches about an all-loving God who does not want anyone to suffer, does not want anyone to live in a shack where there's not enough food for the table for their children, where there are not schools for their kids. No. This theology teaches about a God who gave every country enough resources for everyone to live comfortably and in peace, where there will not be oppression, discrimination, and hunger. And in this theology, they know that everyone is called to the table as equals. Where no one at that table can say they are superior or better than the other, or somehow more worthy to do something. No. We are created all, everyone, of equal worth and dignity. The repression in Bolivia intensified. Many were killed. Many imprisoned. In my fifth year, I was among the many arrested, and I was forced out of the country. It was a hard time, a lonely time. I could not go back to my mission, people that taught me so much and who I grew to love, who became my family outside of Louisiana. I and many became very involved now in the School of the Americas issue. After Bishop Oscar Romero was assassinated in El Salvador, after four churchwomen from our country, two of them Marino sisters, good friends of so many of us, Sister Maura Clark and Eda Ford, and with them were the Ursuline, Sister Jean Donovan, and Dorothy Kazel, when she, of the Ursuline community, with the four women, raped and killed by the military. And then when six Jesuit priests, a young mother, their co-worker, and her teenage daughter, Selena, were dragged out of their rooms at the university, the Jesuit University in El Salvador, and were massacred. And when a congressional task force went to El Salvador to investigate, when they returned reporting that those responsible for this massacre were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia, that's when I and a small group went there to start up the School of the Americas Watch. And when the United Nations Truth Commission report announced that those who killed Bishop Romero, those who raped and killed the churchwomen, and the Jesuits and the young mother and her daughter and so many others were trained at this School of the Americas at Fort Benning, Georgia, our movement, I must say, blossomed. Over 50,000 soldiers, we learned, had trained here over the years. They came here to learn combat skills, counterinsurgency. We learned that the insurgents were always the poor, the faith leaders like Bishop Romero, the churchwomen, the Jesuits, and others. They were the labor leaders, especially in Colombia, human rights activists, healthcare workers. They were the targets of those who trained at this School of the Americas. We put the word out. Let us gather at the main gate of Fort Benning every November, that weekend before Thanksgiving, to show our love and solidarity with our sisters and brothers of these countries, 15 countries who have their soldiers here. Let us call for the closing of this school, a school that was causing untold suffering and death to so many of these countries. And our movement, I must say, went from 10 to 100 to 1,000, 5,000, 10,000, 20,000. And it was such a joy to see, as we gathered there, so many students, high school students, college students, the women religious, the nuns who came into our movement at the very beginning. Parents came with their children. And what a wonderful way to teach our children about peacemaking, about that all-important word, solidarity. A lot of veterans came, the Grandmothers for Peace. We had speakers, musicians. At night we had, at the convention center, a lot of workshops, teach-ins, dealing not only with the School of the Americas, but other injustices, racism, sexism, homophobia, and that all-important issue, the drones. I must say, in this area, as you know better than I, there is that air base that is causing a lot of suffering and death. The name of the base?
Hancock,
right outside of Syracuse, where the drones are located, where there's a lot of intensive, sophisticated teaching about the drones, and how in this state and in that area, in this area, there is a movement that's being, like the School of the Americas Watch, that's growing. And that is a movement in your back, in the backyard here that needs attention. Drone warfare. How these drones are being used in Pakistan and Afghanistan and other countries and are killing many, many civilians, including many children and their parents and grandparents. And we should know about this. I'm happy to report 6 countries, due to our delegations to these countries and meeting with their presidents, 6 countries have withdrawn from the school. Argentina, Uruguay, Venezuela, Bolivia. It was such a joy to go back to Bolivia and to meet with the president, Evo Morales, and have him say to us, Bolivia will no longer be sending their troops here. And then just this past year, we met with the presidents of Ecuador, Rafael Correa and President Daniel Ortega of Nicaragua, and they too made a decision to pull out. And next month we'll be going to El Salvador, hopefully to meet with the president there, requesting once again that they pull out. We're not going away, we're keeping our hands on the plow. Thousands will gather in November once again at the main gate of Fort Benning. I know some of you have been with us down in Georgia at the main gate. Could you please raise your hand? All right, yes. Whenever we gather there, that Sunday is very solemn, as you know. We call out the names. We carry thousands of those white crosses bearing the names of the victims and the children, their ages, call out their names. And by the thousands in unison, we say, Presente. This person is with us. We are touching on the sacred here when we call out their name, followed by Presente. Many weep. And when we get to the fence, we turn it into this memorial wall. We place those crosses on that chain link fence. And some always feel compelled to go over that fence or around it. And over the years, over 350 of our people have done that and have been arrested and have gone off to prison for 6 months. And whenever they send us to prison, our movement is energized, more come into the movement. The truth can never be silenced. They can jail the resistors, but they cannot jail the truth. But for more information on the School of the Americas, just go to our website, soaw.org. In April, we're going to be in Washington, knocking on those congressional doors. Reminding our members of Congress that we do not want them to be spending our hard-earned tax money, millions of dollars, going into this military school, training all of these soldiers from Latin America, every dollar coming from our pocket, when there are budgets being cut to our schools here at home, here in New York and wherever I travel. This is a scandal. This is really a theft from the poor of our communities. Over the last 22 years in working on this School of the Americas issue, in addressing this injustice in Latin America, I discovered an injustice much closer to home in my church as a Catholic priest. I began to meet many devout Catholic women who shared with me and told me of their call to the priesthood. And what I heard reminded me of my experience years ago in Vietnam, that call by the divine, that call by God. And because I was a man, a male, I was able to become a priest because the church teaches men can be ordained. Only men, And I began to question that teaching. Why wouldn't women be ordained? Don't we profess that we are created equal? All priests say that the call to be a priest is a gift and comes from God. And the question I asked myself and my fellow priest was a simple one. Who are we as men to say that our call is authentic, but your call as women is not? And what I saw here was a grave injustice. Years ago, I had learned something very important, as many of you have. When there is an injustice, our silence is the voice of complicity. And I had to break my silence to sleep at night. And wherever I spoke on the School of the Americas issue, audiences got the package deal. They also heard about this injustice of the exclusion of women to the priesthood. And the more, I must say, as an activist, and so many of us are activists, as parents, people in the workplace, we know how important meditation is to be quiet, to withdraw into solitude. I've become a great lover of solitude, especially when there's a struggle going on. And time in prison, I must say, those 4 years in prison at different times helped. Some of the best retreats I have had were in prison, where you are able, when you are still and quiet and in solitude, see with clarity these issues of injustice, and more important, what you must do in relation to that injustice, and to muster up the courage that you will need to confront it, knowing that if we confront injustices, there will be consequences, some little ones and some real big ones. We've all experienced that. And what I saw very clearly in my church's teaching was that sin of sexism. It brought back memories of growing up in Louisiana, going to segregated schools for 12 years in that little town, and worshiping in a Catholic church where the last 5 pews in our church were for our black members. And no one said, we have a problem here. What I do remember are the mantras. It is our tradition, this issue of segregation. We are separate but equal, we said. And what our church leaders are saying about women not being ordained, it is our tradition. Yes, men and women are equal, but they have different roles. Sexism, like racism, like homophobia, and all these other forms of discrimination against others, it's a sin. It's wrong, it's immoral. And no matter how hard we may try to justify discrimination against others because of their race, their gender, their sexual orientation, in the end, it is never the way of God. And in this case of excluding women to the priesthood in the Catholic Church, it is the way of men, little men with little faith and little hearts, who have created God in their image, and their God is very male. Their God that they worship somehow sees women as lesser than men. And this must stop. this must stop. Sort of a turning point for me came when I went to Rome to speak at a conference about Latin America and the School of the Americas. And the message was well received by a large group of sisters and priests. And then the last day there, I was invited on Vatican Radio for an interview for 15 minutes to speak about the School of the Americas. And I had two more minutes to go, and I just put it out there. There will be no justice in the Catholic Church until women can be ordained. And I talked about how women are also being called to the priesthood. And I had another minute to go, but the manager came in and cut me off. The Gregorian chant, that solemn music came in. I slept well that night. I came back, continued my ministry, and then after attending the ordination of Janice Severdecinski in Lexington, Kentucky, that was 4 years ago. Just a couple months later, I received, I must say it was a wonderful, joyful celebration. Hundreds came together to support this woman being called to the priesthood, to say that she wanted to serve our church for the rest of her life. Wow. She said yes to that call from God. And she, like so many of these women, are said, "You've waited for 2,000 years. And we have been patient enough. And we will be ordained. And we will follow our call from God, no matter the consequences." Two months later, I received that letter from the Vatican, very serious letter, giving me 30 days to recant my support for the ordination of women, or I would be excommunicated. The letter also said that I was causing grave scandal in the church by supporting the ordination of women. I went on retreat. I needed a week of solitude and prayer and reflection to write my response. And I wrote back, really focusing in on the conscience, the issue of conscience. As we know, that's very sacred. Our lifeline to God, our conscience, always urging us to do what is right, to do what is just. And when we follow our conscience, wow, we sleep well at night. There's that joy in our heart, that peace. And when we don't follow our conscience, we're torn. We're tormented. And I simply said in my letter, "What you're asking me, I cannot do. It would be a betrayal of my conscience, a lie to you, to say that I do not believe God calls both men and women to the priesthood. This I cannot do." And I also addressed the issue of scandal in closing. And I said, you know, when Catholics hear the word scandal, they think of the 5,000 priests in the United States alone who sexually abused over 12,000 children, and how so many bishops and cardinals, knowing of these horrific crimes, said nothing or covered up their crimes. I didn't get a response back from the Vatican. I went about my ministry, speaking in so many churches and colleges about the School of the Americas and women's ordination. And then on November the 19th, just a couple months ago, I got a call from the Mary Knoll headquarters in Ossining, New York. It was a serious call. I was informed that the Vatican had expelled me from the priesthood and from my Maryknoll community. And I was numb. I was sort of in shock. And then that shock and numbness became very painful and hurt. We've all experienced pain and hurt, rejection at times. No one of us here tonight is a stranger to that. I needed solitude. I just left my apartment and needed to be alone. It was a sleepless night. And the next day I had to respond. And I simply notified Maryknoll in the Vatican. Yes, it is very painful to be dismissed from the priesthood where I found so much joy and meaning in my life. And more hurtful, really, to be kicked out of the Maryknoll community where I've been a member for 46 years. But I did say this: you can dismiss me from the community and from the priesthood, but you can never dismiss, you will not dismiss this issue of gender equality. This will not go away. The majority of Catholics, well over 68%, the polls are showing, support the ordination of women. I've been doing a lot of thinking over the last couple of months, and what I realize is what I'm going through. That's challenging, but it's but a glimpse of the suffering that women in the Catholic Church and society have endured for centuries. What I'm experiencing as a Catholic priest, as a man, is but a fraction of the suffering that so many in our world and in our church experience because of being on the receiving end of discrimination. And this has got to stop. As they say in Latin America, the poor said in the barrio, as they suffered day in and day out, basta, enough. We are going to change this. I have to tell you, in the midst of the hurt, I'm filled with a lot of hope, a lot of hope. I felt that hope last night in Albany when 400 came to the talk. I feel that hope as we have such a nice group of folks here tonight. And I'm sure I'm going to feel that hope wherever I go. And I've been doing a lot of reflecting. There were many who tried to stop the abolition of slavery, including many in our church. They failed. There were many who tried to stop the right of women to vote, the women's suffrage movement. Oh, they caused a lot of problems, a lot of suffering. But they failed. There were many who tried to stop the civil rights movement, especially in the South, and they too failed. And they also will fail in this movement of gender equality, because it's rooted in justice, it's rooted in dignity, it's rooted in equality, and most of all, it is rooted in God. And that is unstoppable. In closing, I just want to say my only regret that I have as a Catholic priest is that it took me so long to break my silence and address this issue of male domination in the Catholic Church. Thank you.